This is Market Insights, the Market Pulse podcast by Oanda.
I'm Johnny Hart. This is the Market Insights Market Pulse podcast. Let's join our guests for the day, Oanda Senior Market Analyst Kenny Fisher, and in the United States, it's Trader Nick. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hi, Johnny. Hi, Kenny.
Nice to be with you, Johnny and Nick.
So let's start with the NASDAQ, Nick, which is down 2% today, I'm assuming because of disappointing earnings from some of the big tech companies.
Yes. And, you know, the big ones that were in play last night when the earnings came out were actually Google and Tesla. This, in tandem with Netflix, were, I guess, the three big kickoffs to earnings for the tech sector. And we see overall, Google actually had pretty decent numbers. You had on the top and bottom line for earnings and revenues, pretty decently strong numbers. There were some things that the market didn't particularly love. I think YouTube revenue growth was not a crowd favorite, but overall Google earnings were good. And yet we see the stock down here today, just about 3.5%. At one point it was down like in the five plus percent on the day. Now, the reason I point those numbers out specifically, you may, if you're a listener and you're newer to kind of earnings season, you might say, well, Nick, so you just said that Google's earnings were good and the stock is down. And welcome to financial markets. It can be a little confusing at times. You know, the idea here is that yes, earnings were good, but the market is pricing these heavy hitting stocks so richly that they have to not only hit their earnings expectations, but massively beat them and guide for much higher earnings beyond that. That's just the name of the game in big tech earnings land right now. Another contrasting example is Tesla, which from peak to trough recently has seen a 95% rise in their stock price. I'm talking about when, you know, we saw mid-April, their low being around, you know, $140 per share. They launched up to just about $270 per share. It was a ginormous rise for Tesla. Well, they've given back some gains today. We actually see the stock down 11.5% at the time of us recording this podcast. And what you can see is they actually had not great earnings on the bottom line. They missed pretty big and their revenues came in just around expectations. So to kick off earnings season, a little bit of a mixed bag. Market doesn't love it. But to your question about the NASDAQ and the S&P 500, why those are down pretty big today, there's so many forces here. It's actually a very difficult day and hard, I think, to actually attribute it to one single factor. You know, you might say, well, give me the cheat code. Why is the market down? Well, there's a lot of things here. We see the ongoing battle between who's going to win the election between now what seems to be Harris for the Democrat Party and for Trump on the Republican Party. So we see them going at it. And now, as we were just discussing before jumping on this podcast, we were discussing that election odds have narrowed. There was a much wider lead for Trump, expectations for a victory from him. They've narrowed a bit. Now it still leans Trump, but that narrowing, and this is something that I've been really thinking about a lot in the markets, that uncertainty is something that the market does not like. They want to know, I think, you know, whether it's a very strong lead for Kamala Harris or a very strong lead for Trump. I think the market would prefer to have that political uncertainty behind it rather than what we seem to be shaping up now, which is maybe this is going to be a bit more competitive election than people are thinking. So we'll see. I mean, again, Trump still has the lead. And then there's other forces at play. Today, we had PMI numbers out of Europe, which were weaker than expected. And then you have, you know, in the US, we had services PMI came in a little stronger, but didn't cause a whole lot of stir overall. So there's several different forces here. What's going to happen? Who becomes the president? And then there's this also uncertainty that got dashed into the middle of it that I just want to briefly touch on, which is Trump's made some statements in regards to Jerome Powell cutting interest rates before the election, warning him, you know, he shouldn't do that. And Powell has reiterated many times that he, to his word, does not let politics sway what him and his team do. So there's some uncertainty there. You know, a lot of people would say, I think general financial community thinks that Jerome Powell is doing a decent job at getting this stuff under control, given all the fiscal spending that's going on. But then you have this volatility of, well, Trump is coming down hard on Taiwan. He's coming down on Jerome Powell about this. That's all stuff that the market doesn't need right now in terms of uncertainty, right? Whether you agree with Trump or not, the point is the market is just saying, okay, there's some uncertainty here on the geopolitical stage, on the fiscal policy, the monetary policy. There's a lot of uncertainty. And I think the market has taken a breather because of that. That would be my rough overall view.
And pretty unusual to see a presidential candidate, or indeed a president, suggest to the chief of the Federal Reserve that any cut in rates is politically motivated. I'm pretty sure Jay Powell would be pretty upset about that, because he plays a fairly straight bat, doesn't he? But that is what Trump is suggesting, isn't he? That if there's a cut before November, that's there to help the Democrats.
One theme that Trump has kind of reiterated is he wants a little bit more control when it comes to monetary policy stuff. And I think that that really goes against the flow of the river, if you will, because Jerome Powell and the Fed being kind of independent from the political back and forth arguments is bipartisan, usually kind of a, hey, that's how it should be. They should be doing their job. We should be doing ours. And let's just kind of respect the boundary between us. But that wall getting, you know, tested or challenged by our next president possibly is a really big uncertainty to the markets. I think that we see the Fed doing, as it stands, a pretty decent job at handling the, you know, while they're going back and forth in Congress and with the president, Jerome Powell and his team are doing the best they can to kind of get inflation. So any disruption to their process is certainly a volatility thing.
One last question on this before we go to Kenny, Nick. I'm interested to know, maybe you don't know the answer to this, but is there a preference for markets? I know they don't like uncertainty, but is there, do you think, a medium to long-term preference for markets between a Trump or a Harris presidency?
Well, you've asked maybe the hardest question possible, because the biggest one here, Johnny, I will preface my answer with, no, I don't know, because I'm not, you know, a super high level economist that, you know, knows this for certain. But here's my general thought. As you've just proceeded, you know, the idea of the markets just want to see a strong candidate winner, whether it's, you know, right or left. I think the market can settle down with either one and go back to economic figures and monetary policy. But do they have a preference? It's so hard, because you could say, well, Trump is pro-business and tax cuts, but at the same time, he has a hard take on the Taiwan, China, and geopolitics situation. So, you know, there's conflicting thoughts. Then the tariffs are a highly controversial topic. Is that going to be inflationary and cause, you know, inflation to reaccelerate because of imported goods? There's so many levels to this. I think that generally speaking, the markets, you know, snap reaction would be more positive if Trump were to get elected, simply because the tax cuts are like a pretty well-known result. If you think about, like, how is this going to impact the markets right now? Well, tariffs are debatable. Tax cuts for corporations, that's straight up just more money in their pockets. So I think that's kind of a stronger case. That being said, you know, the other side to it, if you talk about big tech, is the Democrats seem to be a little bit more on the regulation heavy side. Regulation is not great for these kind of almost monopolistic companies we have in the US, you know, so maybe that's a little negative for specific tech parts of the economy. But it's a challenging question. The question is, you know, not about the stock market per se, but the economy, which presidential candidate accelerates the economy more. That's hard. I'm not truly sure. Kenny, what do you think about that?
In the same instance, it was done much more politely, of course, in the UK. Before the election last month, the Bank of England came out with their rate decision, I think, 2 weeks before, or a week before the election. And a rate cut would have certainly helped the Conservatives, who could have pointed to a rate cut due to their economic policies showing success. Bank of England head Bailey was asked about this and said that we're making our decision strictly based on what's good for the country and what's good for the economy. And at the end, the BOE did not raise rates. But again, there was some speculation, you know, what would they do? And would it help the Conservatives, or would it help labor? So there is this tension between rate decisions around election time, certainly.
Indeed, and it would have certainly helped the Conservative government as it was then if rates had come down. But having said that, the way things are looking at the moment, we might not have a cut in August anyway. Kenny, I want to talk now about some of the other central banks. We've had a cut in rates from the Bank of Canada. I'll be interested to get your thoughts on that. And also plenty going on in Japan, a very strong yen. And we're going to hear from the BOJ on Friday as well. So where do you want to start, Kenny?
Yes, John. As you mentioned, the Bank of Canada did cut rates today. It's the second time in 2 months, and that brings the key interest rate down to 4.5%. The economic data really supported the cut, and it was widely expected. Around 87% was the number that the markets had priced in. So the Canadian dollar really showed almost no response to the cut, which is understandable because it was widely accepted. As far as the Bank of Canada is thinking, inflation has gone down. It's below 3%. The central bank expects inflation to continue to keep falling and reach the 2% target in 2025. Unemployment is going up slightly, so the labor market is weakening a little bit. And with the weaker economy, it's a chance for the Bank of Canada to lower rates. But at the same time, they're always keeping a bit of an eye south on the border on the Federal Reserve. They don't want to get too much out of sync with the Federal Reserve, because if the Bank of Canada continues to lower rates and the Federal Reserve doesn't, then the rate differential is getting larger. And that's bad for the Canadian dollar. So the Bank of Canada is hoping that the Fed does lower rates in September, and then there's a good chance we'll see another rate cut from the Bank of Canada.
Yeah, so just in regards to, Kenny, about like the global situation with central banks, what's interesting about it is we've jumped all over the place here about talking about, you know, the ECB and the Bank of England and what was happening during elections. I think that one note, getting back to the topic of central banks, is as market participants, as commentators, as analysts, like the best thing we can hope for is that Jerome Powell on the Fed side does respect the political process, but respect more so his duties, right, to actually cut interest rates when they see it appropriate, not trying to time it based on politics. And I think that we can only, as again, onlookers to hiring the right person for the job, hope that he does stick to his plans, regardless of who the president probably will be or not. And I do think that the other thing is that, you know, whether Donald Trump becomes president or Harris or whatever, I think that hopefully we see, who does Jerome Powell pay more attention to? Well, I hope that he pays attention to his central bank allies, right? They're all working together, really. I mean, the Bank of Canada, Bank of England, ECB, the Fed, they're working together. They don't want to disrupt each other's process or make things unstable between the two. So hopefully we do see a cordial kind of process where who he is paying attention to is central banks from our, you know, major allies. I think that that is really who we hope to see him pay more attention to than Donald Trump or Kamala Harris or presidential elects.
Before I let you go, guys, I mentioned the yen up 2% against sterling today and almost that against some of the other major currencies. What is behind that, Nick?
Big thing on the yen that I want to draw attention to. I was actually having a conversation about this earlier today with someone, and we were discussing, you know, why does the yen suddenly look so attractive? And the yen, in terms of the Japanese economy, in terms of growth, in terms of, it's not particularly impressive. So why is it so strong today? Well, I think the real answer to yen strength, at least historically speaking, when you see a carry trade unwind, which is where higher yielding global currencies see selling in favor of the more stable Japanese economy for the Japanese yen, that may be sort of the trade here today. Another thing to just draw a comparison to is consumer discretionary stocks are down big today in the US. So we're seeing a lot of the consumer pain. We're seeing PMIs out of Europe. So maybe what this is, maybe this is a combination of central bank intervention from the Bank of Japan, but maybe it's also just a bit of a preference for the Japanese yen due to global slowdown and flocking more to what is considered a bit more of a predictable, stable currency. I mean, just to pass over also, the gold market is up today, right? We see gold up 0.73%. So maybe a bit of a risk-off move, maybe just, you know, we also see that the VIX is up 14.5% as we speak. So clearly a lot of pressure on the sell side today, and maybe that is also causing investors to grab hold of the yen. Kenny, what do you think on that?
I agree with everything you've said, Nick. We were talking a bit before about the huge rise in the yen today. It's up about 1.45% against the US dollar, and there doesn't seem to be any data that really supports that. I did see one report that a senior Japanese official urged the Bank of Japan to normalize their monetary policy, and they're meeting next week. So it's a live meeting because we're not sure what they're going to do. They may decide to hold, or they may raise interest rates. So with the yen, it's interesting because the yen just a few weeks ago was really on a tailspin. It was over 161 against the US dollar. And that very weak yen was putting pressure on the Bank of Japan to raise rates. So we'll see what happens now that it's showing some strength and a rebound. But there is talk that the Bank of Japan should normalize policy. I wrote down that I find the Bank of Japan is what I call ultra-cautious and ultra-non-transparent. which actually makes it a lot of fun to follow. They're often very busy with speculators and playing this cat and mouse game with the yen. And I think they enjoy catching the markets by surprise. And we really can't rely on them for a signal about what they will do with interest rates. But they have been some signals that they may try to raise rates. Also, inflation is coming out this week. The Tokyo core CPI, which has been rising above 2%, which is not very high compared to other countries. But for Japan, we have to remember that inflation, by definition, is almost is really a new phenomenon. They've had decades of deflation. So when you have inflation between 2 and 3%, which it's running at, that's pretty high for Japan. And the Bank of Japan would like to lower that to closer to 2%. So there's another reason why they may tighten rates next week, which would really be a very interesting scenario and should boost the Japanese yen if they do decide to do so.
Very interesting, Kenny. Thank you so much for your thoughts. And Nick as well. We'll speak to you, Nick, on Friday. Thanks very much for joining us today.
Thanks, Johnny.
Nice to be with you guys.
Market Insights, the Market Pulse podcast by Oanda.